One in five Massachusetts residents has experienced a medical error in the past 5 years. That's one of the key findings of a study out today from the Betsy Lehman Center for Patient Safety, a state agency that conducts research and training in medicine. The study finds the excess cost of medical errors in just 1 year is more than $600 million, and that's a conservative estimate. The researchers used insurance data to track preventable errors like infections after surgery, excess blood loss, and bed sores. To put these findings in context, we spoke with a couple of people, a hospital administrator and a doctor. Dr. Marianne Bomba is the president of the Massachusetts Medical Society, and Kim Holland is the president and CEO of Signature Healthcare, which manages Brockton Hospital. He's also the chair of the Mass Health and Hospital Association's Clinical Issues Advisory Council. This new study notes that there are errors in 115 of every 1,000 hospitalizations in the U.S. So I asked Kim Holland why errors remain so pervasive in Massachusetts and across the country?
It's a great question. Some would say that the human error rate, just we as humans doing something that we've done a lot, a number of times, our error rate is 1 in 1,000. Think of just in a hospital the number of medications we deliver in a day. It is in the thousands. So one of the problems, I think, embedded in errors or mistakes or complications is the fact that healthcare is a one-on-one personal relationship delivery system that is human-based. It is very difficult to error-proof it 100% because humans are interacting in a very complex environment, prone to make mistakes because humans will make mistakes if we do something enough times. And I think that's one of the sort of embedded problems in error prevention in healthcare.
Well, then, Kim, if I may ask, I mean, I take that point, and yeah, obviously, the human error is inevitable in any field. So, what in your mind might be an acceptable error rate?
I can't come up with a reasonable standard. I think we have to, in healthcare and leadership in healthcare, be driving towards zero errors and zero harm. The second we say there's an acceptable error rate, something less than zero, we start tolerating errors, not knowing whether that error was one that was acceptable or not. And I think we have to be aiming at zero harm and zero errors in healthcare.
So, Dr. Bomba, one of the other things I want to ask you about is the patient experience side of this. You know, so there's sort of two parts to this latest research. One is sort of documenting the scope of errors, but the other is how patients react to it. And this is something that stood out to me. So these researchers found that in more than half of the survey respondents who had a medical error 3 to 6 years ago, so this is some time has elapsed now, more than half of those people say that they always or sometimes continue to avoid doctors or the healthcare facility involved in the error. So there's a breakdown of trust there, Dr. Bomba, which may or may not be reasonable. How do we address that? I mean, how do we restore trust so that, you know, patients aren't avoiding subsequent care that they maybe need?
Communication is absolutely essential. Perhaps we're not as skilled in being able to communicate bad news or errors or complications when they occur as well as we do better news. And this is certainly something that we need to improve upon going forward.
Yeah, it's a sticky issue, right, Kim Holland? Because as we talk about communication after there is a medical error, you know, one of the findings in the survey here by the Lehman Center is that, you know, a lot of patients said, look, I would feel better if a doctor was just up front and said, you know, I made a good faith mistake and here's how we're going to address it. But for you as a hospital administrator, I mean, is that something you want? I mean, would you want doctors just acknowledging, yeah, I screwed up? Because don't you open yourself up to lawsuits then all of a sudden?
You do open yourself up to lawsuits, but I'd much rather physicians as well as other clinicians admit when we could have done a better job and to be upfront and direct with patients. And the research shows actually just the opposite, that when we apologize to patients, malpractice suits actually go down.
Because patients feel like they're not being gaslighted and they're less likely to be angry and sue, you're saying?
Absolutely. And I think sometimes patients will believe that physicians and healthcare providers really didn't make a mistake intentionally. I think patients understand that and appreciate it when we acknowledge them and say that we need to change our processes and do better.
Kim, you said earlier that there isn't, it's hard to put a number on what an acceptable error rate would be. And I wonder if maybe there's a different way that you could kind of gauge it. I'm remembering an interview that you did with the Brockton Enterprise when you first took this job in 2010. And the editorial board of that newspaper asked you, you know, if you would, you and your family would seek your own medical treatment at Brockton Hospital, you know, sort of as a show of faith in the hospital that you oversee. And you said, yes, I'm going to do that. And I'm thinking then of a more recent report we just saw in the New York Times last week, that was really sort of explosive because they had these secret recordings of doctors, cardiologists at a hospital in North Carolina acknowledging that they would not be willing to take their own family members for heart treatment at this hospital. I mean, is that maybe a standard that you can use? I mean, if you as a doctor wouldn't be willing to refer your own family to your hospital, maybe that's the problem.
Oh, if you are an insider in an organization and not willing to use your own organization, I think you have an obligation to try to improve that organization. You know, physicians have tremendous power, I believe, in our industry and should use it for good and should use it for positive change in their organizations.
Dr. Bamba, I'm remembering another story from probably 12 years ago by now about the checklist particularly in surgery. This was written by Dr. Atul Gawande, and the way he put it was that, you know, if there was a drug that was as effective as a checklist at improving healthcare, that, you know, we'd be just hailing this drug as a major breakthrough. I mean, is that something you see more and more, just sort of like almost like a flight checklist before surgeries in hospitals? And are there other similar procedures that we can put in place to reduce errors?
Absolutely, and I'm familiar with the checklist. That is one tool, but how do we design systems of care that are safe? And that will mean not just in my office, but when patients are then sent to the hospital, and then when patients are discharged from a hospital to go to a skilled nursing facility, this continuum of care, Cal, is what is very, very important to be able to design a framework for safety around, and hopefully building on the checklist, we will be able to go forward with a framework for safety that can be embraced across our care system.
So what should patients take away from this latest research by the Lehman Center, Dr. Bamba? I mean, we're holding institutions accountable. That's you know, what we should be doing. But I also don't want to lose sight of the fact that we do have world-class, you know, medical institutions and doctors doing great work every day here in Massachusetts. So we don't want to overstate the risk either. So what would your takeaway message be for patients?
For patients, I would ask them to partner with us in their care where they can, to not be afraid to ask questions, and likewise we should never be afraid to be asked a question or to have our plan of care, what we're doing, to be questioned. We want to partner with our patients. We want that openness. We want that communication to be there. It has to be there.
And Kim, what about you? Your takeaway message for patients? I mean, is it, you know, don't freak out, but also, you know, remember that, you know, your doctor is not God, and so you should reasonably push back and ask questions.
I think you really should ask questions, and patients, I believe, do have a role in their health care. One of the ways we make mistakes is human biases around comprehension, around thinking biases. And one of the things we're teaching our physicians at our hospital to ask in handoffs are four questions. And I think the four questions might equally be good questions for patients to ask their physicians as they engage and ask questions. And they are, what else could it be? What can't we miss? What doesn't fit the picture? And who else should be engaged? I think they're great questions that are fair for patients to ask their physicians.
Checklist for patients as well. That's Kim Holland. He's the president and CEO of Signature Healthcare. Kim, thanks a lot for your time.
You're welcome.
Also, our thanks to Dr. Marianne Bamba. She's the president of the Massachusetts Medical Society. Dr. Bamba, thanks for coming.
Thank you so much, Cal.
Stay with us. We'll have the latest on David Ortiz next. I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.